Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's not just your business. It's 10 years of planning, saving, and risk-taking. It's not just another order. It's a chance to gain a loyal customer. It's not just a box. It's how they'll remember you. And Staples Connect isn't just a store. It's where you'll find innovative tools your small business needs, like premium shipping supplies to give your customers a one-of-a-kind unboxing experience. Explore what's new at your local Staples store or at staplesconnect.com. Staples Connect, the working and learning store.
My kids this past school year, they did that really cute elementary school thing that many of our kids have done, many of us have done, where they have a caterpillar and they put it in a little mesh dome and then they watch as it builds and goes into its cocoon. It stays there, it hangs there, and then eventually it comes out as a butterfly. And they loved it. When the pandemic started, it sounds absurd to me now, but I told my therapist that I was going to go into this pandemic, a caterpillar, and come out a butterfly. I thought that I was going to have time to focus on growing in ways that I was working on myself to get into shape, to get really organized. I was going to use it as motivation. That is what I told my therapist. And I don't know whether to laugh or cry at that absurdity. Because over the last year, I don't know about you, but I gained 20 pounds. My kids have really struggled at various points, just with emotional challenges or school struggles. We lost the patriarch of our family to COVID, my husband's grandfather, and then we moved. And we don't know anyone in our new hometown. So it was certainly not the year that I thought it was going to be when it first began. But now that we're fully vaccinated, yay! Science, thank you. Scientists, thank you. The weather is warming again, and you get that little nugget of hope that things could get better and are about to get better. You know, I'm noticing that here I am, definitely not a butterfly coming out of my cocoon. I feel battered. I feel exhausted a lot of the time. There were months this past winter where my husband and I felt like we couldn't sleep enough. No matter how much we slept, we were just exhausted all the time. But I think somewhere, even within that cocoon, the winter and the long, hard slog of the pandemic, there was a tiny nugget of hope and a sense that things could change, not just after the pandemic, but that we could make the kinds of changes to our life that maybe we always wanted to make. And if you're like me and you're reflecting on how this pandemic has changed us, changed our priorities, our bodies, our minds, and our mental health, you're going to want to hear today's episode. Because if you're going through that turmoil of the changing seasons of life in motherhood, or the changing seasons in our post-pandemic world, today's guest has a lot of wisdom to share. Hey, Mama. Welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have really honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy, the co-founder of Motherly, and I'm a mother of four myself. And this month, we're focusing on such an important topic that is impacting all of our lives, especially now, and that is mental health. This week, we're diving deep into mental health with a candid conversation with Catherine May, the author of the best-selling memoir called Wintering. Catherine's book chronicles the year that she really retreated from the world. It's this concept that she and others call wintering. She had a series of events that led to this really hard season in her life. And that same year, she decided she was going to take a mental health break. And she made the difficult decision to pull her 6-year-old son out of school because he was really struggling after being bullied. I got to talk to Catherine about this really radical act, as she describes it, to slow down. And she shared why she thinks that mothers don't honor their most difficult moments enough. And then we got to hear about what it felt like for her to really be able to finally come out of that season of life and engage with the world again in a brand new way. Catherine May, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so of course, this podcast is all about motherhood, and you do talk in your new book about your decision to have a son and how motherhood reshaped your life. But I'm curious, what about motherhood surprised you the most?
Oh my God, everything. Before I became a mother, I saw myself as a basically capable person. And I think those first few weeks of having a baby disabused me of that impression immediately. I thought I could organize my way out of anything. And suddenly I just was pitched into this situation of really not coping. Like, I wasn't ready for the dehumanization that happens when you become a mother. Like, people referring to you as mum straight away, as if you don't have a name and you're not an independent entity. You're just this thing attached to the baby that they're servicing. I was so shocked by all of it, actually. I was completely astonished at what the reality was like compared to how I'd imagined it.
What did you imagine?
I don't know. Do you know what? I wasn't one of those people who had expectations of it being perfect. I'd been really careful to kind of study other people's experiences and to really listen, you know. And so I hadn't been the person that was expecting my birth to be soft lighting and beautiful scented candles. Like, I was really ready for it to be awful, and it was. And that was fine. That was within the realm of my expectations. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can ever predict the tidal wave of emotion that comes when you have a tiny baby, and the way that it restructures your brain immediately, and how you never could get back a sense of independent self without your child. The whole thing just shocked me.
Well, I know you've talked about different seasons in motherhood as being this sort of winter. And I do, of course, want to anchor this conversation in your book. So many people are talking about it, and it gives us so much to dive into just from the perspective of parenting and being a person through this time of life. But I'm hoping you could start, especially for our listeners who haven't read your book yet, is there a common definition of wintering that you are giving? What does it mean to winter? And in particular, I'm intrigued that you call it a radical act.
Wintering is this word I've borrowed really to describe times in human life where we fall through the cracks, when we feel kind of, I mean, there's loads of wintry metaphors you can use, but sort of left out in the cold, when you feel frozen. Just those times when something happens, you know, like a mental or physical illness or a big life event that stops you from being able to function along the same lines as everyone else for a while. And you go through all those horrible feelings of not being able to get a grasp on the world, like being really cut off and watching everything through glass. And that is something that comes to all of us. One of the things I wanted to do with the book was to just completely normalize this experience of bad things happening and it throwing us out, and to stop pretending that that doesn't happen. But I also think that you can choose to really dig into your winter, and that you can learn from nature how to survive it well and how to use it as a way to build wisdom and resilience and all of those brilliant qualities that we kind of hope we have, rather than to keep pushing it back and to prolong our suffering.
I know, because I read the book, but for those who haven't, what happened to you? You were kind of off on your professional journey and you had a sort of series of events that changed the path that you thought you were on, and you entered this season of winter in your own life. What were those events?
Yeah. So as the book opens, my husband fell very suddenly ill. He had a really serious appendicitis and it was very touch and go for a while. So my whole life was kind of thrown into this chaos and it brought really close those mortality fears that, you know, that come to us maybe in the middle of our life as we approach that. And it kind of brought very close that sense of what would happen if we did lose him. And at the same time, I had decided to leave my job. I was running a creative writing program at a university. I already knew that it had got too much for me and that I was stressed. But I then began to develop like really serious symptoms of abdominal pain and other things that made me have to be signed off work. I was so ill, I couldn't work. And again, that was like mortality knocking at my door. You know, my doctor told me to be ready for a cancer diagnosis, which thank God was not the case. But I have, you know, got a sort of permanent condition now, which probably was exacerbated by the stressful life I was living. And so this perfect storm happened where I felt very cut off from the world and you know, like quite paranoid, quite humiliated, like I couldn't keep up with stuff that other people seemed to be keeping up with absolutely fine. And then just as I was beginning to come to terms with that, my son became very, very stressed and we had to pull him out of school. So it led to all three of us being kind of sitting there on the outside of the world, really, and feeling like outcasts and having to figure out how to get back on top of life again.
I know that wasn't the first time you had gone through winter. You've talked about the diagnosis that you've had with Asperger's being a time of going within and that growth. But also you just said the birth of your son was such a shocking season of life. How do you think those earlier periods of rest and retreat and reflection and pain maybe prepared you for that?
Yeah. I like to say I'm like an expert winterer, you know, like I've been through the mill enough times to have gained a few skills. It's really interesting to link that to my autism diagnosis because I think that all autistic people are kind of really familiar with this pattern of burning out, falling out of life for a while, poor mental health, and just feeling like an outsider. And I think it kind of primes us to be able to understand how this pattern works. And I decided to write the book when I watched someone else wintering. I was talking to a friend and I could see that she was like in the depths of a personal winter. And she really believed that she wouldn't come out of it, that she'd kind of finally blown it and that life was going to stop from here. And it suddenly dawned on me that the beauty of my perspective, as painful as it's been throughout my life, was that I could see that there was a shape to her winter. I knew that it was going to get better. And I could, in fact, place her exactly where she was in like the narrative arc of it, if you like. And that suddenly felt to me like a gift. Like I had this thing that I could teach other people and I wanted to pass it on.
The case you make, and I'm on board, I'm a believer, but that we in the West, especially in America, are so obsessed with productivity and achieving and moving forward, right? Yeah. And we're really uncomfortable with feeling the sadness and embracing slowness and seasons of rest. And
we're catching up with you, don't worry.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
It seems that the concept that you're putting forward of wintering is maybe an antidote to toxic positivity or productivity or just hustle culture. Keep going. Yeah. You're going to get there. I guess, do you see it that way? Do you see it as the sort of shadow side of those cultural characteristics?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a radical response to those things. And it's really interesting. I mean, I've done a lot of interviews this year about wintering. And one of the many responses I've had is this kind of terror of the idea that I'm suggesting, which is that sometimes you need to take a rest. And that's such an unsurprising idea when you think about it. Like 50 years ago, that wouldn't have seemed in any way challenging or dangerous. But where we are right now, there are many, many people, and often maybe they're a bit younger, who find that like, whoa, how can you suggest this? Because if I stop for one moment, my whole universe will literally collapse beneath my feet and everything will go wrong. And I don't know if we're at a kind of peak of that belief and that it's time for it to crumble, or if we're not there yet. Maybe it's going to get worse. I don't know. But it feels to me like we have got to this place where we cannot imagine stopping, and where the structures that we've built around ourselves are completely dependent on overwork. And it is overwork, you know, it is destructive. It is getting in the way of us living fully rounded lives. I think probably a lot of people realize that for the first time when they have children. I should think that's
exactly.
That's something that mothers know, like, wow, this is not sustainable.
That was exactly where I was going, which is that, you know, I've heard sort of sage mothers advise young mothers that there are seasons to life. I've heard that kind of concept bandied around a lot. I wonder how you see new motherhood, this new life, this fresh little person and the new mother, right, that has been born. In what ways is new motherhood a kind of winter?
Of course, it's many seasons at once. And that's something that we hold as human beings. You know, yeah, we hold that promise of fresh life. We hold that midsummer when we hold our baby, because that love that we feel is so absolute and so sustaining. But also it is a winter, you know, it's a time of being pulled away from the mainstream of life. We don't know how to honor mothers. In fact, we so often see it as a degraded position, as something that is just a sign that you've blown it, or that you are damaged goods somehow, you know. And we do not welcome mothers into everyday life. Like, we expect them to suddenly start socializing in separate little pockets, lest they bore the rest of the world, you know, or they disgust everyone with all the, you know, milk down their front or whatever it is. I mean, I was always like draped in muslin cloths for the whole of my early motherhood period. And the level of isolation that mothers feel, particularly early on, is horrifying when you look at it. And the level of poor mental health that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And also the strain and stress that people are put under in needing to make a living at the same time. You know, wow, that's a perfect storm. And we are so quick to blame mothers if things are difficult with their children, like if something goes wrong for their kids. But we do not stop nearly enough to think about how we are facilitating the upbringing of children as a whole society. And that includes the well-being of mothers. That has to include it. It's relevant.
I was reflecting as well, when you talk about these seasons and the cycles, you also talk a lot about ritual. It made me think about how we respect the feminine. Because in our bodies, every month, women go through a whole universe of this cycle, right, within us. And then the gestation and development of this new life, and then the period of bonding and recovery that happens afterwards. I wonder if wintering, in some sense, has a feminist sort of twist to it, and that it's the other side of progress and achievement, the very male-dominated concepts, and then the slowness, the resting, the cycles.
Well, actually, Sylvia Plath says winter is for women. And in the Celtic tradition, winter is the gestational part of the year. It's this time of brewing new life. Like, they didn't see it as dead. They saw it as a time where potential was entrenched within that season, and where newness was imminent and being developed and being nurtured. And they therefore saw it as a time to nurture themselves and to take care of the home and the hearth and the family. Winter is associated with femininity in so many different ways. The sense of drawing into the home, the sense of tending to things that need to be mended and taken care of, rather than like the summer, which is kind of going out and burning stuff up. You know? I mean, to me, summer is almost a destructive season. It's this time when you spend out your energy. And both are necessary within the cycle. But there's a real beauty to winter. And that beauty is maybe something that we don't talk about as like an element of women's lives enough, like our ability to draw in and hunker down. That's something we do really well. And it's something we have to do over and over again.
I love all of that.
Another thing I found myself wondering is sometimes when you're in a winter, you tell yourself, summer's coming, summer's coming. But I think so much of what you're suggesting is it's about getting comfortable or accepting the discomfort of not knowing when, or maybe even if summer is coming, right? And I guess I wonder, can you be in winter without believing that there might necessarily be a summer for a part of your life?
Yeah. I mean, I think hope's really important, you know, and but that doesn't have to be this kind of false optimism, this toxic positivity, which is often when we're in winter, what everyone wants to tell us is, don't worry, it'll be all right soon, you know, put on a brave face. That's not helpful. And that's not actually hope. It's just telling people to shut up and stop embarrassing yourself. It's not the same as offering hope. I think that the skill of wintering is rather than to say summer is coming, to say I am in winter, like just to be where you are right now and to know that you can't control the end of that winter in the same way that you can't control a season. And if you have faith in life being a cycle, and if you have faith in winter being like a normal part of this cycle rather than an anomaly or a mistake, that's where your hope comes from. It comes from this kind of trust in the course of human life as it is, rather than from trying to hurry everything along in a really artificial way, which often is actually quite self-destructive.
So many mothers, so many humans, but certainly women have unexpectedly gone through a year of change. You know, in the US, we have millions of mothers who dropped out of the workforce, went into a winter that they didn't see coming. I guess I'm wondering what advice you might have for listeners who have really endured something right now and want to come out. Maybe they're coming out transformed in ways that they didn't want, or they want to use it as part of a transformation. What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen that a lot, particularly for women, is that so many people are making massive changes in the face of this pandemic. And, you know, they're sometimes really practical. They're sometimes like, okay, well, I've got to rearrange things because I can't be vulnerable to this again, you know? And I'm hearing a lot of women say, I need to make more money, you know, on a really straightforward basis. Like, I've got to make sure that when the next crisis hits, I can afford childcare, you know, or I can afford help around the house or whatever it is. And for other people, it's been a real creative awakening, like a moment of realizing what you actually love to do and realizing how far away you are from that passion. Like, I've seen loads of food businesses being started and that kind of thing. People pursuing new careers, loads of people writing books, which is I always love to see. And yeah, I mean, I like that's what wintering does. Like, it throws all the cards up in the air. And that's not a fun process. But when you look back on previous winters, no matter how grueling they were, it's very rare to hear someone say, like, I wish that had never happened, because they often invite this change. And that's because they invite a reevaluation. They take us right back to our roots and right back to our values, like the core of us, like what we really care about, because they strip everything else away. And if you let it, that will lead you into a better choice for the next phase of life.
Oh, I want all of that for every one of us.
Yeah, I wish that kind of winter for everybody. And to be really clear as well, those changes aren't always instant, right? Sometimes that's about saying, okay, I can see I'm in a bad situation here and I'm going to make a 5-year plan whereby I retrain so that I'm in a more flexible job in 5 years' time. It might not be that you can pivot straight away, but it is so important to trust those insights that come to you and not to see them as silly and not to dismiss them or see them as impossible, but instead to say, I've been offered something here and how am I going to turn my face towards it and figure out how to get where I want to be? Because we all deserve that, I think.
So you didn't just go through a winter. You also share in the book that your son went through his own kind of winter where you decided to pull him out of school, really wasn't working. And you embraced this homeschool like way before the rest of us had to. Yeah. Can you talk about that decision and why children need winter as well?
Yeah, I mean, the homeschooling thing was a really hard decision for me because I am not a natural homeschooler. I'm not blessed with patience, you know, and I love my time on my own. And I also didn't feel like it was necessarily the best thing for him either, because he's an only child and I felt like it was really important for him to be around other kids. But it was also a very easy decision because he couldn't stay as he was. There was absolutely no way, and I needed to urgently get him out of a situation that was destroying his mental health.
What was going on at the time for him?
He was just incredibly stressed by the school environment. He was being bullied. The school weren't taking it very seriously. And he was just in pieces. I couldn't keep sending him back into school when he was just devastated to be there. And that was the advice that everybody gave me, like, don't listen to him, just force him back in. And I thought, this is wrong. If we set up this pattern so early on in our lives when we don't listen to our gut, and that's what I was expected to force him to do, was to not listen to his gut instinct that something was going very, very wrong for him, and to not listen to my gut instinct too, that something was going very, very wrong for him. And I've never been very good at conforming. So I heard what the school was saying, which was like, we can't do any more. You've just got to force him into school every morning and he'll just have to suck it up. That was the message, really. And I kind of thought, I'm not willing to do that, because actually what happens when the next crisis comes for him and the only thing he knows how to do is to suck it up and tamp down his emotions and pretend it's not happening? Like, that is the foundation of toxic masculinity right there. And it's the foundation of a life of depression and anxiety. And I just rebelled against it. And that meant spending time with him while we both explored what it was for a child to be in a winter, because that's where he was. And I wanted to teach him that that was actually a safe space to be in, that sadness is an okay emotion to have and it's valid, and it was telling him things. And it took a long time for the full story of what had been going on for him in school to come out of him. He couldn't express it straight away. I ended up being really glad that I made that space for him. And he's actually now really happily back in school, a different school, I might say, and loves it. But he also is incredibly compassionate towards other children going through similar things to what he did. And he's ultra conscious about bullying. And he's really good at talking about his feelings. And we've worked on it. And I'm so proud of that resilience and how he can talk about his moods and how he can go out and advocate for other people. I feel like he learned something far more valuable than the year of, you know, maths that he would have done.
Tell me a bit about homeschooling. What was that actually like for you? Were you like more of an unschooler, or really trying to get the academic knowledge in there? Because so many families have been accidental homeschoolers this last year. And yeah, I'm curious what that experience was like for you.
I think the first thing to say, I mean, obviously I did it this year as well. And it was really different pre-pandemic, because there are loads of kind of secret groups that homeschoolers can join that are happening all through the school day, where your kid can go and play with other kids, and activities set up and classes. And this time round was a lot lonelier and a lot harder. And yeah, I was much more of an unschooler. I felt like for him at his age, like, he was 6 at the time. And I felt like what he really needed was some space to develop emotionally and intellectually. That's where he was struggling. So I didn't really care about the maths and the reading or whatever. I knew he'd catch up. I used to be a teacher, and I'm really aware of how kids all develop at different rates, and that you have to go with the rate that they're at rather than trying to impose a rate on them from the outside. So we were just really relaxed about it. But what I really noticed when this time came around was, A, the extreme isolation in the pandemic was so different for me and for him. But also the sort of schoolwork that he was being asked to do at home had a very different quality to the kind of work that most homeschoolers do, which is much more unstructured. Like the pressure of having to do a sheet of maths questions every day from school and then read this little slideshow and report back on it in this way, that was a lot less joyful than it. I think what I'm saying is that I don't think what people experienced in the pandemic was homeschooling, actually. It was so much less flexible and so much less radical, actually.
Many of our listeners are still stuck in their pandemic winter. So I guess as someone on the other side of that, what do we have to look forward to from this unexpected time of sadness?
I think the first thing to say is that for some people, the dip is yet to come, actually. For some people, the act of survival has been keeping them going. And actually, as things begin to thaw, that's when they're going to feel challenged, because actually that's when they're going to have to face a lot of emotional stuff that they were able to push back before now. And I think also I'm already seeing big spikes in anxiety as people are going back out into the world. It's affronting in a way that perhaps they didn't expect. And so I think the first thing to really emphasize is always that your winter might not end when you think it will, that it could be slower. And it's really important to thaw out slowly, not to kind of push yourself too far and too fast and not to overwhelm yourself. But when that does happen, when everything begins to move again for you, it's a time of such optimism and promise and newfound joy. But also it's about a reappreciation of stuff you already knew. Wintering cleans your lenses a little bit. It makes you see the world around you from a fresh perspective. And it makes you appreciate things that perhaps you'd forgotten to notice before. It does engage us with the small. And that's glorious. And you know what makes it better is if you can go out and tell the truth about it. It's very hard to come out of a winter if you're trying to conceal what's happened. If you can go out and trust people with it, and that you have people around that you can trust with it, to go back out and to talk about it and to be clear about where you've been in the world, I think is a real gift too.
Oh, I love that so much. Catherine May, thank you so much for joining us and this enlightening conversation on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you. It's been so lovely to talk to you.
It's not just a box. It's a chance to gain a loyal customer. It's not just an office chair. It's why I'm able to play freeze tag with the kids after working 10 hours. And Staples Connect isn't just a store. It's where you'll find innovative tools for small business and remote workers, like premium shipping supplies that make a statement, and the All 33 Back Strong chair that'll make your body forget that you sat at your desk all day. Explore what's new at your local Staples store or at staplesconnect.com. Staples Connect, the working and learning store.
So do you remember last year during the pandemic and all of a sudden we couldn't go to school anymore in person?
I thought it was a lot better because no one could be annoying you or anything. The host could just mute them and you could turn on background effects and stuff.
Which do you think you prefer then? Is it in person that you prefer for school or going remote?
Remote. Definitely. So much better, 100%. Would you rather do that? And plus, you only need to just show up for your classes all that other time. Video games or eating lunch whenever you want.
So you had more control for what you wanted to do?
I definitely think the guides thought it was a lot better because, like, in real life, you can't just, like, mute someone. Be like, oh, stop talking, mute. And plus, I don't know why I never did this, but you can fake glitch.
You can be like, oh, sorry, I have a bad connection.
And you can just, like, stop moving. Like,
yeah, you have a bright career ahead of you in remote work tactics, I think. Well, that's it for our episode this week. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our listeners for listening to the Motherly Podcast. Next week, we've got another guest coming up all about mental health. Please be sure to tune in. As always, we would love it. I would love it if you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Just takes 30 seconds. You can do it right now. And I read all your feedback, but most importantly, it really helps other mothers discover our show. The Motherly Podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with audio engineering from Seaplane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thanks so much for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.